Before we dive into today's trend conversation on local government in 2014, here's your local and regional news. The National Weather Service says less than an inch of snow has accumulated in Evansville, but it's enough to create slippery spots on the roads. Police reported numerous slide-offs this morning and some southern Indiana school districts delayed classes. Henderson and Union County schools in Kentucky were closed today. The plume from a West Virginia chemical spill is now expected to arrive in the Evansville area early Monday morning, but officials are confident the water will be safe to drink. WNIN's John Gibson has details.
Officials tell the Evansville Courier and Press that the chemical should be diluted enough not to pose a hazard when it reaches the Evansville area, nearly 700 miles downstream from the spill. But Wendy Bredhold of the environmental group Moms Clean Air Force tells WNIN News that she's concerned about remnants of the chemical because we know so little about it.
It's just one of tens of thousands of unregulated chemicals on the market, and there are limited studies and limited information.
Bredhold emphasizes that she's not trying to cause a panic, but she says laws regulating chemicals are in dire need of upgrading. Water utility officials say they're closely monitoring the water and are in contact with the Ohio River Valley Water Sanitation Commission, or SANCO, and other communities upstream. John Gibson, WNIN News.
An Evansville police officer who was fired last month is asking a judge to review his dismissal. The Police Merit Commission fired Officer Steve Hicks in December over accusations from a bartender about his conduct at a local bar. The Evansville Courier and Press reports Hicks has now filed a petition for judicial review in Vandenberg Circuit Court. Under Indiana law, a police officer or firefighter dismissed by an administrative board can ask a judge to review the dismissal. Officials, including Mayor Lloyd Winicky, will cut a ribbon to open the Evansville Museum's $14 million expansion on February 7th at 2 p.m. A news release from the museum says the facility will be free and open to the public that day. The Reaching for Stars project includes the 2.5-story iCamp Pavilion and the Cook Immersive Theater with a 40-foot domed screen. It will replace the museum's current planetarium. That's your local news. I'm Cass Harrington. Stay with me for today's trend.
Support comes in part from Evansville Day School, partnering with parents to offer a student-centered education program for students junior pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. More information at evansvilledayschool.org or 812-476-3039. Well, we have a special treat for you on today's trend, our first ever Carpenter House concert with the roots band The Wood Brothers. You may remember they opened for Zach Brown at the Ford Center, and we will have them live, or we will have them on the air here coming up in about 20 minutes. Don't miss it.
There's a spoonful of honey where your heart should be, and there's a honey drip off your spoon.
You're listening to The Trend. I'm Cass Harrington, and Steve Berger, thank you for the introduction. We do have a special show for you today, Local Government with a Beat. We have the Wood Brothers sandwiched in between two local politicians to round out this conversation, to balance it, give it a little rhythm here. Anyway, to start, my colleague John Gibson met up with Mayor Lloyd Winicky to talk about his agenda for 2014, and we also revisited a couple topics that came up in last year's headlines. Let's listen to that.
Mayor Lloyd Winicky, we appreciate you joining us today. We'll start with some good economic news this week. Berry Plastics announced it's moving more jobs to Indiana, almost 300 to its Evansville headquarters. What's the impact of that on the community?
This is a great announcement for the city. They're investing $31 million in their Indiana operations. That translates into 280 jobs here in Evansville. This is the second major jobs announcement expansion by Berry Plastics in the last year. Right at a year ago, we stood by the Berry executives to announce a new expansion at that time that was really the result of a lot of collaborative work that helped them solve a logistics issue. They were having great difficulty difficulty getting raw material to the plant site. So we worked with the railroad, we worked with the Indiana Department of, or the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, various other agencies to get that fixed. That allowed them to expand a year ago and really kind of set the table for this expansion. And we were able to get Vectren to the table. Vectren was key in this because they were able to negotiate some long-term rates that are really tied to job growth. So it's a you talk about, we use the phrase win-win a lot. This is a win-win for the city.
Now, I understand there's something called the Small Business Roundtable.
We're going to kick that off sometime in the first quarter.
How will it work?
Well, we're still working out the mechanics. But one of the things we do now, and I've been doing for quite a while, is I go out and visit corporations, manufacturing sites. I sit down and talk to the plant manager or the general manager or the president, whomever, tour the facility, and really have a general discussion about where that business is in its life cycle to figure out what the city can do to help facilitate growth. And we've had some very fruitful discussions. Honestly, that's one of the reasons that we were able to get the Berry deal done, because we have a great relationship with them. So it's about relationship building. It's about making sure local existing businesses know that the city can be a resource, not necessarily to write a big check, but maybe we know someone in state government, an agency that can help them further. So the Small Business Roundtable will be an extension of that. Instead of going out, we'll just be bringing folks in. But the idea is to hear where they are in their business life cycles and to figure out how the city can partner with them.
Now, the groundbreaking for the new convention hotel downtown, it was postponed last week, I understand. Now, is there a new groundbreaking date at this point?
We've not set a date, and we want to be clear there are no environmental issues or no other big issues looming out there. A couple things have happened. One, the weather, as we all know, has been horrendous. And so when we made the decision to delay the groundbreaking, it was when we were, you know, it was -5, -7, and the wind chills were, you know, minus a gazillion. I don't know, but so the thought of breaking ground at that time was kind of an unsightly thought. The other thing that's happened is that as the developer has done its geotechnical work, that is to say, the groundwork in on the site, they found about 60 pilings or steel girders that were left over from the old Executive Inn parking garage. They were not anticipating that, and so they've kind of gone back to the drawing board to redesign their foundation. This will not delay the opening. There was enough sort of wiggle room in the front end of the time of the schedule of this project that would not affect that. So we will announce a groundbreaking date, you know, I'm not sure exactly when, but we will, you know, relatively soon. Just last week, HCW, our hotel developer, was in Indianapolis, sought and gained approval by the state building commissioner for some plans that they have, variances that they require for them to go forward. So we've also received the latest designs of the hotel. We've asked them to go back and change a few things. They've done that. Late last week, we got some sample materials in of the material. We've seen the samples of the glass and the limestone. So a lot of things are proceeding there.
But those old pilings at the site there caused at least something of a slowdown.
Something of a slowdown, certainly for the ceremonial groundbreaking. And, so they're trying to figure out exactly how to deal with those. But, you know, that's why they get paid the big bucks, as they say. Figure that out.
Well, how will the city go about attracting conventions and events after being without a convention hotel for several years?
Actually, we've already started. In late December, I was partnered with the Convention and Visitors Bureau. They were the primary sponsor for a big dinner and awards banquet for an event organization. So there were 275 or 80 event planners from all over Indiana in one site in Indianapolis. So this CVB was the primary sponsor. So we got 8 minutes to promote Evansville and the city and the new convention hotel. The CVB did a great job producing a video to promote the new hotel and the city. So we're out promoting it. And the CVB team...
That's the Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Is doing that as we speak. And HCW, again, our hotel partner, has hired a management company to run the hotel, Pillar. Their representative was also at this meeting. So contacts are being made.
A lot of eyes and ears were there.
Absolutely. And in fact, we hope to, I'm not sure exactly when we'll be able to announce it officially, but we think we know who the first big conference slash convention will be.
Yeah. Well, speaking of another possible downtown project, since you last spoke with us here at WNIN, the city has chosen a developer for the IU Medical School project. Where does the process stand on that?
This is an exciting project. The Indiana University Board of, or the Indiana University Capital Division, issued an RFP in December. They asked for developers to respond to this RFP. Essentially, they need 170,000 square feet that would take up the medical school and then collaborative learning space between USI, U of E, Ivy Tech, and IU.
Mm-hmm.
So we have now partnered with Skanska, U.S. Health Realty, and they have partners, local partners, VPS Architecture here in town, Bernard and Lockmuller as our civil engineer. So they are assembling a great concept. We had a great concept. They are now flushing it out, and it is a, I would tell you, it's a dynamic concept. We think it will really revitalize downtown. So we've given that to the design team, the architects, et cetera. They're honing that as we speak. We have until January 31st to complete that and return it to Indiana University.
I see. Now, are you working with any state legislators on the med school project? Do they support a downtown location, or are they involved in the process at all?
They're not involved in the process yet. They will be. And I certainly respect why many of them would want to remain neutral, because there are competing sites, and they certainly represent interest all over the area. So someone may not want to come out right now and say they support downtown if they also represent Warwick County, let's say, and Warwick County is interested in obtaining the project as well. So we'll go to the legislators certainly after the site is selected, because we'll be lobbying them, or Indiana University will be lobbying them for funding in the next legislative session in 2015.
I see. Funding for the med school.
Yes.
All right. Well, you and other mayors across the state have announced opposition to the bill that would that could put a same-sex marriage ban into the state constitution. Why did you decide to publicly announce that, and how do you think a constitutional ban would hurt Evansville?
Well, what we did was in November, when this was starting to, we're kind of taking an early assessment of how the legislative session was going to play out. We wrote a letter to the local delegation just expressing our opposition to it. A couple of reasons. One, we think there are more important issues that the state legislature should be debating, especially in a short session of the General Assembly. There are things that, frankly, I personally think are more important to the city of Evansville that relate to economic development, taxes, et cetera, that they should be spending their time on. So we communicated that to the legislative delegation in late November, I believe. That became public in, I think, sometime in early December. Personally, I'm not sure that it sends the right message about the state of Indiana, about how welcoming we are. Certainly respect each side of this issue, and based on the testimony that occurred earlier this week in Indianapolis, it's going to be a hotly contested issue in the state house, and therefore taking up a lot of time.
In the couple of years that the process began, nationwide, of course, we've seen quite a few more states that have moved to allowing gay marriage. There seems to be do you see it as a tide turning in the U.S.?
Yeah, I would describe it this way. I think people are understanding the importance of being more accepting and more inclusive.
Yeah, yeah.
Support comes in part from Rabin Tire and Auto Service, a proud sponsor of WNIN programming. Rabin offers a selection of tire brands including Michelin and Goodyear, along with complete auto service and recommended maintenance by trained technicians. Information on the web at rabintire.com. Later in the program, Cass will have Evansville City Councilman Jonathan Weaver live in the studio to deliver perhaps a differing view. That's later on The Trend, so stay tuned.
Speaking of civil rights and that kind of thing, equal rights, we're approaching the Martin Luther King holiday. I believe the last time you were with us here, we talked a little bit about race relations. How do you see race relations in Evansville these days?
You know, I think it's difficult to say, you know, to describe in one word. You know, could they be better? Probably. Could they be better in almost any city in the country? Probably so. I don't know that race relations are necessarily any better or any worse than other cities. Actually, I suspect they're probably better here than many cities. The problems we have, I think, probably pale in comparison. And that's not to diminish any problems that may exist or how people perceive they are.
Right.
It is an ongoing process. I think one of the things that we have really strived to do in our administration the first 2 years is really stand up for equal rights and treatment of other, treating other people with respect, and that's what it's about. I think people expect a fair shake, and I think people want to be treated with dignity. And sometimes some people are better at that than others.
Of course, there was that videotaped incident involving a black man stopped by Evansville police last year. It raised some eyebrows. What is the EPD doing to improve its relationship with minorities in the community?
Well, a couple of big things. One, the much-discussed body cameras have been delivered. Actually, the manufacturer sent the wrong cameras initially, so they had to be returned, and the right ones recently arrived. Officers will begin training with those late this month, and they'll be on the street. So that's one thing that will happen. Sometime in January or February, we'll roll out a new police community relations program that we think will be very beneficial to the community at large and to the EPD. And we picked this up as a best practice in one of the regional neighborhood network conferences that our folks went to in Peoria just last fall.
I see. And so when do you expect that to be rolled out?
Working on the pilot right now. I expect to see that in the next week or two after I see it and say, I like it, or I think this needs to be refined, a little bit of that. You know, I would hope that it'd be rolled out in late January, February.
Yeah. Now, just this week, going back to the State House now, you and the Democratic president of the Evansville City Council, John Friend, you both traveled to the State House this week. You testified against a tax cut proposed by Governor Pence. What would that tax cut do, and why are you opposed to it?
It's the business personal property tax. Mm-hmm. It is a tax that is placed on business for their personal property that, that's involved in a business. Could be manufacturing equipment, could be computers, et cetera. The governor, first, as part of his legislative agenda, proposed eliminating the tax, and he's teed it up as tax reform. And I get it. I respect it. House Bill 1001 is a variation of that. It would give counties the option to eliminate the tax. What I'm fearful of, and what other mayors around the state, and there were five of us that testified on this bill Tuesday, is that we need replacement revenue. If that tax went away tomorrow, or even if it went away over a number of years, we get about $7.3 million a year. Without full replacement, you're going to see significant cuts in city services.
More than $7 million a year?
Perhaps. Several legislators on Tuesday pointed out to what the state of Michigan is doing. They're in the process of, they have a referendum to phase it out, but they're going to phase it out with a guaranteed full replacement to local municipalities. So there won't be a loss in revenue to those states. I've been in 2 years as mayor and 3 years as a county commissioner prior to that, in the many economic development projects that I've been lucky to work on, never once has a business said, boy, we'd come to Evansville or we'd come to Indiana, but you have that business personal property tax. Now, I mean, I totally get the businesses and individuals want to pay as few taxes as possible.
Right.
I mean, I do. I get that. But at the end of the day, there's more to making a decision about where to locate a plan or make an additional investment than just the taxes. It's about quality of life, and we think with a huge cut, potential cut in revenue to cities and towns and schools, that it would be potentially devastating to quality of life and just sort of how governments do their job.
When it comes to competing with other states, I mean, do other states have that kind of a tax or a different system?
Some do, some don't. But, you know, I think you have to look at not just that tax,
right,
but the totality of the tax packages in each competing state. You know, if you listen to folks of the Indiana Economic Development Corporation and others in the administration, they rightfully tout how Indiana ranks highly in this category, in that category, in this magazine, in this, that magazine.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot to brag about.
Mm-hmm.
So I get that we want to be as attractive as possible. But we think that eliminating this tax or phasing it out without full replacement revenue to local, mm-hmm, local units of government would be really difficult. And I think one of the things we heard on Tuesday's discussion with legislators is, mm-hmm, you know, well, we're giving you the option. Think about this. Okay, so Vandenberg County keeps it. Posey County eliminates it. Or Warwick County, I mean, you're pitting county against county. And we're
right,
already competing,
sure,
head-to-head on projects, big and small. So, I mean, and right now, around the country, regional economic development is what's working.
Mm-hmm.
So we think it kind of flies in the face of what we know to be current best practices in terms of economic development.
Because you'd be pitting county versus county.
Right. Neighboring counties.
Sure, sure. Well, as we mentioned, you and City Councilman John Friend were both up there at the State House testifying against that tax cut. Now, as I'm sure you know, Councilman Friend is considering a run for the mayor's office.
Oh, really?
That is, in fact, the case. And now, the two of you obviously showed some unity on this issue. Do you expect politics to get in the way of progress City Council this year?
No, you know, I don't. Mm-hmm. I do not. Clearly, our administration and members of the council don't agree on every issue that we face.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you look at the hotel project, we found a way to make it happen. And mm-hmm, we did so because we kept people engaged in the process. We kept members of the Common Council engaged in the process. We kept the business community. We kept the labor community. Everybody was talking to each other. And, I mean, not one group or not one person made it happen, but collectively people did. Mm-hmm. So while we disagree, unlike Washington, D.C., you will still see great progress because, you know, John, if you look at it, there's a lot of positive progress going on right now in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't expect, because one member of the council has said they may run for mayor, that's not going to change the way we do business.
Yeah.
We come to work every day to try and figure out how to make Evansville a better place to live.
And speaking of politics, I'll give you a chance to make some news right here on WNIN. Are you running for a second term as mayor?
Yeah. I mean, we've made no bones about it. I love this job. I love coming to work every day to try and make Evansville better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure at some point at an appropriate time, late this year or early next year, we'd probably have some big blowout news conference making it official. But we have every intention of running again.
Mm-hmm.
We like what we're doing, obviously. We like the way we've raised the level of engagement in the community. We think we've helped change the dialogue and the tone of discussion on important community projects. And there's a lot of work to do, and, you know, we'll reapply for the job, John.
It's good to know. And, of course, that's still, as you say, more than a year away before
right,
before it really gets serious,
right,
I suppose. Well, Mayor Winneke, anything else to add that we haven't touched on here?
No, you know, I would say that, you know, just to reiterate, you know, there's so much going on, and it's all positive. You know, if you think about what's happening, the convention hotel, if you think about the medical school, mm-hmm, assuming it land wherever it lands, 1,600 to 2,000 people on that campus day one, whether
mm-hmm,
that's downtown, east side, Warwick County, USI, it's going to benefit our region. It's positive progress.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about the Lloyd 41 interchange, that's going to be a huge improvement. Now, it will create some bottlenecks, and it will be a little painful for a while. We'll see some orange barrels, no doubt.
Yeah, for quite a while, I'm sure.
But, you know, look at it. I mean, we'll take two lights off of the Lloyd Expressway. That has got to be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
There are 60,000 cars a day that go through the Lloyd Expressway at 41.
And from my experience, I'd say most of them get caught by one of those lights.
Exactly. So the fact that we can take, you know, build a new full clover leaf there, take two lights off the Lloyd, so that's good. And, you know, there's a lot of positive stuff going on.
Is that project still on schedule, as far as you know?
It is. We were notified this week. Bids will be let now the 29th of January. So if you drive around that area, you can tell some things have been cleared in preparation for that project. So we are anxious to get it underway.
Well, Mayor Lloyd Wenneke, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you, John.
That was my colleague John Gibson speaking with Mayor Lloyd Wenneke. I'm Cass Harrington, and with me in the studio now is Councilman Jonathan Weaver. Jonathan, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Hey, thanks for having me. How are you?
Good. I thought we'd need a second perspective on city government for this year. But before you and I start our discussion, I want the listeners to know that our phone lines are open. Twitter is open right now. We're going to take calls right here live. The number to call, I'll give them to you slowly, 812-426-7400. Or on Twitter, you can use the handle TheTrendTalks or at WNIN News. So, Jonathan, based off of something the mayor just said, I wanted to reiterate. He said, unlike Washington, you know, we may not disagree, but we're still seeing a lot of positive progress. How do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Take a look at downtown with the Ford Center. Let's go back a couple years. The Ford Center has been built. Then look at all the offshoots from it. You had Backstage Bar and Grill open, Main Gate open, Babel. All those restaurants down there are doing a lot better. A lot of great things. The Convention Hotel coming. It's downtown is the place to be.
Without a few bumps and hurdles to get there, right?
Well, you know, we had that hotel vote, but...
Hell yes, we did.
Hell yeah. So, man, sometimes, you know, you just got to make the vote simple. And it's a yes or no. You don't have to grandstand when you tell people why you're voting and take a five-minute dissertation of why you're flip-flopping on positions and stuff. But, you know, we were always for the hotel. We knew we needed a hotel, and it's a good thing that it will be coming at some point.
Hmm. Well, not always. I mean, City Council did vote against it before the final financing came out.
Well, I mean, you had some personalities on there. You know, we're a very vibrant group, and people have their opinions, and rightfully so. And that's why you elect all of us, because, you know, we don't want to rubber stamp everything, but we do want to be progressive and not delay things. So we got to find that fine line, hopefully soon in the future.
Good. Well, we're going to come back to that. But first, I wanted to talk about the personal property tax that has been discussed, not just locally, but in statewide conversations. So the mayor and John Friend traveled to, they were actually against removing that tax. And I wanted to hear from your perspective, maybe you can also speak for John Friend, why you agree with that decision.
Well, it's at this second, there's no replacement.
That $7 billion.
Yeah, so you're talking about, I believe it's $7 million within the county.
Okay,
we'll have to double-check those figures. Anyhow, it's a lot of money. So we're talking about a lot of money that nobody has come up with a replacement for. So if we cut, you know, we're all about cutting taxes and looking for alternate funding sources. And things are tough out there. You know, Riverboat Fund is supposedly going down. This would hit the general fund. And we don't want services cut. So if somebody can brainstorm an idea of where to replace that money, then we don't have to worry about maybe cutting city employees, not having your potholes filled, not having parks clean enough and stuff like that.
That's interesting. So right now it's just a question of trying to replace that source of income.
Mm-hmm.
And what about, I mean, because the Indiana Chamber is concerned that it's going to deter commerce in the area. What about that?
Well, I'll tell you, it's a self-assessment. As a former assessor, we handled personal property tax. And, okay, I have my property tax appeals company now. And I have to I have to do a personal property tax return every year and tell them what do I have for my business. Well, I have a laptop. And that property tax is $5 a year. So when you have all these other companies, you know, we are expecting them to tell us. Nobody oversees it. You know, you're not your boss, but you know, if you worked at another TV station, they would have to report. Okay, all the desks, all the chairs, all the TVs, everything in there—that's personal property. That's the personal property, stuff like that. Real property is the real estate and the building and stuff. So we're talking about all the accessories in a building. That's a self-assessment that that's depreciated through time that businesses pay taxes on.
Okay. Well, Jonathan, it sounds like we have a call.
All right.
Oh, never mind. Scratch that.
All right.
Well, keep talking.
Well, Cass, this is Steve Berger.
Okay.
We should give the phone numbers again and get some interaction going today because we have that capability. It's 812-426-7400 to make that call. I'm sorry. Sorry to break in.
Thanks for jumping in, Steve. And to add on that, again, you can interact on Twitter at The Trend Talks. Questions for Councilman Jonathan Weaver. So we just talked about personal property tax. What about the one thing that's on everyone's minds, the IU Medical School? Well, I can't jump to conclusions, but a downtown location, is that your priority?
You know, we're all striving for that, I believe. The mayor is, I know that. It sounds like John Friend's for it. I think the majority of the council is for it. I don't want to speak for all nine members. I'm for it. I think downtown would be great. But let's just say, even if we don't get it downtown, having it in this region or expanding in this region is going to be awesome.
Can you confirm for us that it could be located by the Greyhound station?
I cannot confirm that.
Okay. Thanks for answering my question. well, interesting. Why, I don't know, what in terms of, because I asked you about positive progress, and it seems when I answered that question or when you're talking about positive things, most of it equates to downtown development.
Well, downtown, any downtown core is it's the core of the city, the urban core, and it expands outward. So you need a healthy downtown to have a vibrant area. If that were to die, that would not be good for the city and surrounding areas.
Well, and I wonder, based on your voting record, I'm going to talk about, because that reminded me of Roberts Park, and you have kind of led a different path in your voting record, not quite always in alignment with the rest of city council. And I wanted to know exactly why.
Well, I can probably give you a play-by-play on each scenario. So want to talk about Roberts Park or what's the topic, and then we go one by one.
Let's go Roberts Park first, and then in general,
okay,
your voting record.
You know, Roberts Park, when you get out into the community, when you go to the traveling city halls, people want to park. And now you hear a lot of naysayers too say, we have so many parks already, that's true. We have a lot of great parks that are well-maintained that I live across the street from one, Aiken Park, which is like 2 miles from here. It's a great park, a little historic area, 1920s homes. And down the street, there's Bellmead Park, same era of homes, great character. But some of these neighborhood parks people don't know about. So when you got to the brainstorming from the public forums and stuff, people wanted one park that would interconnect to the state hospital grounds. And this is what we heard overwhelmingly. And so this is what the mayor's office wants to do. And we need to fund the infrastructure. There's a grant out there, in my understanding, for infrastructure purposes only. So I guess going back, you're probably talking about the budget vote. Councilperson Mosby and I, we wanted to fund that. So we did not agree with the rest of the council body not to fund it. They wanted not to fund that infrastructure to get started this year on Roberts Park. And that was in the final budget, and that was why we voted no on the budget, because it was not funding Roberts Park.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems, you know, you could Google your name and Missy Mosby's name, and a lot of times you have both been the only no votes on many city council decisions. So that's something I really wanted to dig deep into, why that is.
You know, we are out in the community more than any other of the nine council people. She is everywhere. I wish I had as much energy as her, but I try to get as many places as possible. So we're out in the community. We know what people want. We know what they're saying. We like hearing that Missy and I are the voice of reason. And that makes us feel good. So we feel that we're doing the right thing when we're not going with the crowd.
How so? Interacting with people and hearing what people want.
Oh, you know, like I said, we just go to the traveling city halls. You know, we're Missy is at every neighborhood meeting every month in the second ward. I tried to get to some of them. I'm at large, so I need to go to neighborhood meetings in the sixth ward.
Here at the Wood Brothers, thanks
ward,
for playing.
And you know, all the other wards. So it stretches my energy out. But she is the most in tune council person out there. So and she's been around, and she's highly intelligent and highly educated. And has a great feel for what's happening in the city.
Hmm. Well, I wonder how you are voting on kind of more independently, it seems, how that might affect your future as a leader here in the community. I understand there's a possible mayoral run in your future.
You know, it was brought up, I believe, in June by some website, and then the Courier Press called, and the TV stations called and stuff, you know. You know, at some point in time, is that a possibility? It could be. You know, I'm going to leave my options open for the near future. But, you know, when you look at what the current mayor is doing, you got to be smart about it. I mean, he already has a war chest of six figures. Nobody, no other Democrat has that at this point in time. He does a good job, and we can talk about that after this break, I guess.
Sure. Well, I've got one more quick question for you, looking at 2014. So, mm-hmm. you know, John Friend, he's leading city council now. Mayor has announced his mayoral run for 2015. Are you at all concerned that decisions this year might be guided by politics?
I certainly hope not. John Friend's a highly intelligent person. He knows finances like no other. So we just hope we can be progressive and move the city forward.
All right. Well, Jonathan Weaver, thank you for joining me today on The Trend. We're going to listen to WNIN's first Carpenter House concert with the Wood Brothers. Stay tuned.
Here with the Wood Brothers, thanks for playing. We've got Chris Wood, Oliver Wood, hence the Wood Brothers, and Jono. And really great to have you guys out today. So, Jono, how did you come into this band? Because it's the Wood Brothers. You guys have been playing around for a while, but what's your story?
My story. I met these guys on the road. We just were sharing an opening spot. We were sharing an opening spot for Zach Brown, actually, a few years ago. And I was playing with a fiddle player named Casey Dreesen, who's a friend. And yeah, we just got to hanging and talking, and. Yeah, they gave me a call. I was a huge fan of the Wood Brothers, like huge fan for years before that, and always wanted to play with them, and they just called me.
What's kind of your story when you were growing up? Like, how did you come into that and start playing music?
Our father, like you said, played when he was growing up and played, you know, he didn't pursue music professionally, but he did play in his Harvard years. He went to Harvard, and it was part of that folk scene the late 50s in Cambridge, and that's where he met and played with Joan Baez, and he had a radio show. And so he was kind of that folk generation, and we grew up hearing him play around the house. He would play guitar and sing, and that was our first live music and kind of our first influence.
When you started out, did you have any idea that you would really be playing together eventually?
Yeah, well, we played as teenagers for a couple of years when our we were both still living at home, and I'm 4 years older than Chris, so I left first. But we both went separate directions. Chris moved to the northeast, I moved to the southeast, and we both started our own bands and sort of didn't play together for a good 12 years, 15 years even. I don't know.
Yeah, I think
a long time.
Sort of pursuing different paths. You know, I got into jazz, and I decided supposed to live in New York City, so I went and ended up there, and that's where I started this band, Modesky, Martin, and Wood. And Oliver ended up in the southeast and started his band, King Johnson, and we just had, you know, different trajectories for many years, and then finally kind of looked up from what we were doing and realized, like, you know what, we got the same job and respect each other's talents and want to hang out, reconnect, and make some music together.
Do you find it difficult to work together? I mean, as being a family members, or do you find that that's easier? I mean, you know, having such a close relationship, you know, being blood brothers, do you find that that helps, or sometimes they're a little bit?
Well, I think it helps that we're grown up now and we have been through already sort of the years of figuring out who we are, and so we have maybe less friction than we would have maybe 20 years ago. I don't know, but we always got along pretty well. But it's kind of cool. I think we've probably just appreciate now that we're able to, you know, not only play music together and do what we love together, but we also get to have family close. You know, we've moved our families to the same city. We all live in Nashville, and so we get to kind of mix those things together, the family and it's like a family business. It's great.
If you get to worry, what you ought to do is sing. If you get worried, what you ought to do is sing. If you get worried, what you ought to do is sing. Sing about your trouble, and it just might pass. And if you get lost, what you ought to do is sing. If you get lost, what you ought to do is sing. If you get lost, what you ought to do is sing. Sing about your trouble, and it just might pass. Sing about your trouble. What you ought to do is sing. If you get broken, what you ought to do is sing. If you get broken, what you ought to do is sing. Sing about your trouble, and it just might pass. Yeah, sing about your trouble, and it just might pass.
Jono, before you started working with the Wood Brothers, you did mostly drums beforehand. I'm kind of getting to the whole question about your instrument, the shitar.
Oh, okay.
I think we can say shitar. We can say shiitake mushrooms. We can talk about Shih Tzu dogs. We can probably say shitar.
Totally.
Maybe. Totally. We'll find
fine.
Out.
It's spelled perfectly.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's like guitar, but with a sh. So
yeah.
How did that sort of evolve? I mean, did you, your fans, the Wood Brothers, did that kind of like, was that something in the back of your head? You thought, oh, I might want to work with these guys someday.
I remember about a year before I played with them, I told my wife, I had this epiphany. I was sitting listening to their first record, and I was like, these guys are doing what I want to do right now, and they're alive doing it. It's not a record from 30 years ago or something. Like, I want to do this right now. And then that just passed, and then it happened, I don't know, and they just called me. I don't know, it was something in the air.
Yeah, for us, you know, Jono was such a cool addition because he plays drums, but then with the shitar, it allows us to play in a setting like this where we're totally unplugged and acoustic, but we still have a beat. You know, a drum-like beat, and it's percussion, but it's not like ethnic percussion. It's not like something from Brazil or Africa. It kind of retains the spirit and the character of the music that we're trying to make.
It's all American.
It's all American.
Isn't this an all-America city?
That's what it says on our sign. It does.
All-American percussion.
So there you go.
Yeah. Piece. One of the few American percussion instruments, yeah. The shitar. Yeah. It's not.
But then the singing, I mean, you know, he allowed us to do three-part harmonies, and then the keyboard playing. He's been playing melodica a lot, and on the record, piano, and so it allows us to do a lot of different things. It's really kind of expanded our palette of sonically. You know?
Jonah's like our jetpack. It's like we got a jetpack and we got him.
Well, right, and it is, and you mentioned that all American, and you touched on something how you know these guys are doing what you want to do, and they're doing the American music thing, but they're alive. They're not an artifact in a museum. So in the last few decades, have you noticed sort of this kind of roots music sort of resurgence? Because, you know, here you guys are doing your own thing. Obviously, a lot of blues and folk influences but you're making your own music, and you're using these brand new things like this, the shitar. That's an instrument I'm assuming that you came up with and created. So how are you seeing that and this sort of experimental thing, how are you seeing that that's a part of, you know, maybe the musical scene today, I guess?
Well, I think, you know, as time passes and as all different kinds of music sort of coexist, they end up intermingling with each other. And so there's always been titles created, like Americana is a hot title right now, and a lot of sometimes we go under the Americana thing. I think they used to call that alt country, and then all these titles that really don't mean a lot to us. We're just kind of doing what we like to do, and I think our instinct is to draw from some of the classic stuff, roots stuff, whether it's folk stuff or field recordings or the band or Bob Dylan or stuff like that. But then put our own recipe to it, you know, give it our own twist. And I think the shitar helps us do that, and you know, our limitations help us do that. And you know, there's not a lot of folk bands that have you know, a world class upright bass player and a shitar. And, you know, so it's pretty amazing. So we got that niche.
About a name. What's in a name? I don't know. I didn't really have a question there. I just kind of trailed off. But
a name like Americana or like a genre. Yeah, that's.
It's not just
a name. Yeah.
I mean,
country, America. I mean, what is jazz? There's so many things. And what is country? It just doesn't make sense to us to really think too much about that. So it's just music.
Thank you guys for coming out, and safe travels on the road.
And that wraps up today's program. Thank you so much for listening. That was our first WNIN Carpenter House concert with the Wood Brothers, which includes Oliver Wood, Chris Wood of Medeski, Martin and Wood, you know, that jazz trio, and John O, who plays the shitar. Thanks so much for listening to The Trend. I'm Cass Harrington. We will tune in next week live from Owensboro. Don't want to miss it. The Trend is a production of WNIN in collaboration with the Courier and Press. This episode was produced by myself with help from John Gibson and Zach Genzel from WNIN News. Steve Berger engineered today's program. The theme music was written by the talented Jeffrey Osmond, and I'm Cass Harrington. This is WNIN-FM, Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro.